Today's episode, we had Sean Allard, where we talked about buying your first business. And in his situation, he ended up buying an ice cream shop with two locations. And really on today's episode, we kind of talked about doing it, right? How to actually take action and buy that business, branding, the personal guarantees, sellers, and kind of how to vet them, and ultimately how to expand a business. So Casey, what were your big takeaways?
Man, this guy, Sean, just goes at it. He made it happen. He didn't spend a long time searching. He went out, find the business, and then he executed on a strategy. I'm highly impressed with the individual.
Absolutely. So tons of golden nuggets in this one. So definitely listen, stay tuned, and check it out. Welcome to the M&A Launchpad podcast with your host, Casey and Ferris with Equity Launchpad. On this podcast, you will gain insights on acquiring, investing in, and selling profitable businesses in the lower to middle market. Whether you're a business owner, investor, or aspiring entrepreneur, at Equity Launchpad, we will provide you with the knowledge, guidance, and capital to navigate the world of mergers and acquisitions. Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to M&A Launchpad. Today, our guest is Sean Allard from Phoenix, and he's here to talk to us about ice cream shops and everything we need to know from A to Z. So, Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate the opportunity, and it's a pleasure to be here.
No problem. Excited to have you on. And so that said, ice cream shop, right? That's a space that I don't know much about besides, you know, my kids asking me for ice cream and telling me it's their favorite dessert to kind of go to. So, really, you know, tell us a little bit. How did you get to the ice cream shop and kind of what were you ultimately, is that what you're targeting or what was the thought process there?
Yeah. So just like yourself, I had no idea what the food and beverage space looked like. No background in the space. Obviously ice cream is part of that as well. So was not specifically looking for anything in this, in the retail or food and beverage space specifically. I've been in the sales world for about 4 years, specifically in dental consulting. So helping, similar to what you guys have done and what we're kind of teaching in general business, I was doing specifically in dentistry. So helping dental students, and associates get into private practice. So that that was that four-year background. And then as of February of 23, started looking for a business to buy after that four-year period and came across a variety of businesses. I was pretty agnostic with what I was looking for. And came across everything from manufacturing to food and beverage. And after a couple months searching for really anything in the $1 to $2 million range purchase price, came across this business, great numbers. It was an off-market opportunity that was presented to me from a broker. And I just got really excited about primarily the numbers from a front end. And then we can obviously dig into the business in a second. But yeah, was no,
all right,
not an intent to get into this space.
And we'll dive in here on the business. So, I mean, but what made you mentally say, hey, I'm going to go buy a business,
right?
Most people, you know, it doesn't come naturally if they didn't come from that world, right? And kind of what was that shift in your head?
Yeah. So I would say the biggest catalyst was the difficulty I was having was starting something from scratch. I always knew I wanted to do my own thing, own my own business. And so over that four-year period in consulting, I had tried a variety of different things, such as online stuff. I was doing some in-person rental car stuff. I started a rental car business. I did about 2 years of real estate, both sales and investing. And those things got to a certain level and got some traction, but just really never got me super excited. But again, I knew I wanted to do my own thing. So the next kind of push was diving more into the M&A space. And as I continued to see what was happening in the dental world, I figured that there might be an opportunity to do this in general business. I was not, I always thought it was something you had to do you could only do if you had a ton of money. And so the initial push was for me to get into something of my own. That was really it. And so January, February, like I said, started looking at a variety of different platforms, came across, your typical sites that we can touch on in a second, but came across a variety of sites and doubled down on that side of things once I read a couple books, connected with a few people in the space. And yeah, that was the initial push.
So you self-taught how to do an acquisition?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I do gotta ask, are there any specific books on buying ice cream shops? Anything focused on that?
Not that I've seen. I'm sure there's something in the food and beverage space that applies to kind of everything in that world, but nothing I came across in the Asker world. So, but to answer your question, yeah, I was self-taught, if you will, read a single book, Again, talked to a few people in the space and then really did most of my research on searchfunder.com, Twitter, a bit on LinkedIn, and just jumped in as I completed, you know, maybe a month or so of general research and education.
I love that because it's all about making it happen, right? I mean, we can read all these books, we can listen to all these podcasts, but at some point you have to jump. You've got to do it, right? And yes, that's the power of, you know, not only just doing acquisitions, but almost anything to be a successful entrepreneur, you've got to go at it. You've got to take the risk, right? So how did you look at, obviously you didn't understand financing, or maybe you had a little bit of background of financing, but when you were going through that process of, okay, now I've found the business and now I've got to close on the business. Was that like a whole learning curve for you that just was like, oh my God, or did it all make sense going through the process?
Yeah, so definitely wasn't straightforward. I knew what I was getting into just because of my background in the dental space. So I've seen how transactions unfolded. So, you know, there's a similar structure there in any business that you're acquired, whether it's, you know, ice cream or a dental practice. So there's some similarities there, but I went the SBA route versus, you know, a traditional bank, a commercial bank where you in the dental space. So the process was very foreign to me. And again, like you said, just diving into it full speed was really the only option I had. You know, I could read a ton on the SBA. I could sit down and connect with a ton of bankers and kind of outline what the process could look like. But at the end of the day, I had to go through a transaction to really understand what this looks like. And once I nailed down that price point, once I nailed down the business, it was just a matter of connecting with as many bankers and lenders as I could to understand what was needed to begin the process, what they needed from me financially, how I could even get that 10% to 20% down. So you will not understand what a transaction looks like or how to go through that process without, you know, actually submitting documents, sitting down with bankers and lenders and going through it.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, for those that are listening, right? So SBA, Small Business Administration, they do have a really good program for buying your own business.
The 7A.
And you know, you do got to understand the financing you're going to do before you go buy a business, because that will help tailor what you're looking for, right? I know, Casey, you have obviously a lending kind of commercial banking background. And, you know, for people, right, to understand, like, SBA is really attractive for a lot of reasons, right? Now, you do have to sign on the note. You are liable for essentially if the thing doesn't perform. And so there's risk associated with it, but it's a really attractive loan. And so, you know, from your side, Sean, I think it sounds like, right, you mentioned 1 to 2 million. Obviously, you were specifically saying, hey, I'm going to go buy a business. It's going to be with the SBA, and that's the bucket that I'm going to go define, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I knew my price point based on what I could personally afford with 10% down and some ejection from friends and family. So I knew that was the ideal price point. Once I identified that, obviously there was some constraints I needed to sit around with my search. But that's what I also took to my bank, my lender. And they also identified some of the industries that make more sense for my price point, what I was willing to put down. Obviously every bank is different in what they're willing to finance industry-wise. So, you know, some banks are definitely not going to work in the restaurant space or the food and beverage space. So very dependent.
So how did you handle, and this is always that big question, right? Anybody that's listening, it's like, okay, great. SBA, 90, you can do 90% financing. I can put 10% down. But then how did you face the personal guarantee? Right? Like everybody's got to overcome at some point where they're like, oh, this is all great, but now I got to put it all on the line. So how did you take that? How did you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, once I identified that SBA was the most straightforward path for me, I didn't have to bring on investors. I didn't need to raise capital. I didn't need to, you know, give up equity in any sense of the word. So other than just kind of stomaching it, I don't really have a magic pill for the fact that it was sort of the only option. It was like, okay, do I go all in, buy this business or not? Because this is the only option that I have if I want to go this route alone. Obviously, I could bring on partners and they could potentially take on that personal guarantee. But again, it wasn't something I was willing to do. I wanted to get in the game and learn this on my own and take this first transaction as a learning opportunity. And for me to do that, I had to sort of, I really just had to put it all on the line.
Yeah. So one more confidence.
I absolutely admire that because, you know, one of the things we do here at Equity Launchpad and on our program is to back entrepreneurs that are looking to buy a business, right? Maybe they need a partner. And the number one conversation we deal with is who's going to sign the personal guarantee, right? It's like everybody wants
we want what you have. The
they all want what you have. They want the returns. They want it all. But then you get the documents and everybody goes, you mean I got to put it all on the line? You're like, yes, absolutely.
So, and it's not a free ride. So really quick, just to kind of recap for the audience, right? So you did an SBA loan. It sounds like you levered up to 90%. Right. Yeah. So that remaining 10% you brought between your money and friends. Right. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like those friends really loaned you the money. They didn't even buy into the business. Right. It was obviously you worked out an arrangement, but you are the solo owner of that business.
Correct. Yeah. Friends and family.
Right. Nice.
That's awesome. And I do have to ask. So once you defined your criteria, I don't think you initially said, I'm going to buy a $1 to $2 million ice cream business. Right. I'm guessing you were pretty broad and then the ice cream business kind of came its way.
Exactly. So it took about 2 months to fall on this opportunity. But again, you get into the space with a very similar mindset that everybody else does in the one to, let's say, $5 million range, you know, something sustainable. It's been around for 20, 30, 40 years. A lot of opportunity for growth, just kind of running, you know, anciently, if you will. And so, you know, I kind of took that blueprint to heart based on what I was seeing in the M&A world and looked at things from manufacturing to suppliers. I mean, just about anything other than the food and beverage space. That was really the only criteria I didn't have. I was willing to go that route, but it was more based on the conversation that I was having in the space and learning from others who have gone down the restaurant or food and beverage space. You know, you hear all the horror stories. And so continued to get pushed away from it. But once this opportunity got presented to me based on the conversations I was having with that specific broker, the numbers just made sense. There was clear opportunity for growth. It hadn't been around for 20 years, but it had been very stable for close to five. Nice. And, you know, so owner, ton of opportunity for growth. And so although it wasn't the original plan, you know, it made sense financially, and I felt like it was a simple enough business to understand and that I could plug in on day one and actually, you know, make a change and push.
And I do got to ask. So have you heard of The Food That Built America?
I have not.
It's an awesome TV series. Yeah, I highly recommend
it. Onto it.
They probably have 40, 50 episodes. And basically they talk about all of the brands that are familiar to us all, right? From the General Mills to the Post to anything and everything food wise and really how they all came about, right? Like, you know, like knowing Dave Thomas from Wendy's really used to be kind of the main guy at KFC, right? And all of the, and so they did a really good episode on all the ice cream brands. So I highly recommend that one because you can really start to understand.
It's pretty cool.
Ice cream, you know, was an invention and there's actually a lot of innovation in a space that's, you know, like you said, been around for a while. And so highly recommend that or the listeners to check out if they hadn't had a chance. But I guess going back to the business, so you closed on the business, right? Day one showed up. What'd you do?
That is a great question. So
you didn't kick your feet up on the desk and say, "Hey, I'm the new guy,
sheriff in town,
new sheriff in town."
No. So luckily, I had a great seller. The transition was fairly smooth. Obviously, we'll go into the ups and downs in the first couple of weeks or so. But the first, I would say, week was really sitting down with all the employees, you know, getting clear on where I wanted to take things and just getting a good understanding of how the business actually operated. So being in the shops, working alongside the team members, and just learning more about them individually. And I could have done a way better job of that looking back. I was very focused on, you know, kind of pulling all the levers I identified when I first started, you know, going down the purchase process. I really tried to pull all those levers immediately versus just taking a step back and actually getting in the shops and seeing what was working and wasn't working versus trying to, you know, fix things from afar without actually operating it with my own hands. So, you know, it was a mix of things, being in the shops for a few days here and there throughout the first couple of weeks, obviously a ton of transitional things with me in the cellar, and then sitting down with our, you know, with any of our vendors and understanding how that process worked and just getting very deep into how you actually operate a quote unquote restaurant. You know, again, the food and beverage space is very similar depending, no matter if you're in a full scale restaurant or ice cream, there's, you know, it's inventory, people, and customer service. There's not much more. So just really understanding how to operate a retail business was key for me. So the first couple of weeks was just getting my hands dirty with that.
And quick question we forgot to ask, why was the seller selling?
So he was a young guy, wasn't because he was looking to retire. He was about 35, just recently had a kid he was looking to spend more time with. And he'd been working on the business for about 5 years. And I think he just felt like it was the right time to give it up to somebody who was willing to take it to the next level. He liked the 2 to maybe 3 shop max lifestyle business that, you know, he could operate a few hours a week, had a great team around him, could really be present with everybody in the shops and just, again, have more of a lifestyle business that wasn't requiring 40, 50, 60 hours a week. And I think he set it up, you know, perfectly for himself to do that and really set me up for success going into it, given that if I wanted to keep this business the same, I could work 5, 10, maybe 15 hours a week max. But again, it was built as a lifestyle business with growth in mind. It just never got to that point with the current seller or the current owner.
So did you find, so when you guys closed, how many locations were there?
2.
2 locations.
And how many employees?
20.
20.
And yeah. Today, have you been able to expand from those 2 shops today?
So we're about 5 months in. We're 2.5-ish months from our 3rd shop and 4th shop.
Congrats.
2 shops in Arizona that we're working on now. We'll probably get up to 30 employees at that time by March or April of this year. And then we have a few out-of-state locations that we're working on. So I've actually taken a different approach than I originally had in mind with just going retail heavy. We're looking at potentially trailers, trucks, pop-ups, just a variety of different things. So that will make it easier for us to scale to, you know, 5, 6, 7 locations, maybe even by the end of this year.
Very nice. So
20 people when I bought, and 2 locations.
Yeah. And really quick, right, going back to the seller, I mean, some people just get tunnel vision, right? They get complacent, they're comfortable in life, and they can't see, you know, the expansion opportunities or how to get themselves out of it so they can work on the business. And I think my question for you is ultimately, how much time do you find yourself, you know, in the ice cream shop working in the business versus how much time are you able to sit back and strategically plan out, hey, how we're going to go from, you know, 2 to 5 to 7 to 10?
Yeah.
Right? Are you able to step out of it entirely and really focus on that strategy side, or you still feel like you get pulled back in? Because ultimately with any business, right, what makes, I think, you know, any business, whether you're real estate or kind of hands-on retail business, right, operations, you know, that's where you kind of live and breathe and you always get sucked back into it. So how's it kind of gone so far?
100%. I couldn't agree more. So I got lucky with 2 great managers when I came in. And so they were handling everything from scheduling to inventory management to purchasing. So a lot of my time was spent transitioning and kind of consolidating the day-to-day things that the seller was working on. So a lot of it was, you know, this is going to sound crazy, but most of the business is run off of Google Sheets. So it's just consolidating 20 sheets into maybe 1, right? Just kind of having a master, you know, operations, you know, playbook in one spot.
That yeah.
So a lot of time was good. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I previously worked at Microsoft and came from the tech world, and the number one competitor for almost every software product is Excel. So don't feel bad. Excel, everybody starts there and goes as far as they can until they can't. So.
Yeah. And it doesn't need to be complex, right? We still operate off of Google Sheets and we'll continue to operate off of Google Sheets for, you know, probably up to 10 locations. So, but to answer your question about being in the shops and being, you know, kind of day-to-day there, no, I have been in the shops 4 to 5 times max, and 3 to 4 out of those times, maybe, yeah, 3 to 4 of those times have been, you know, me wanting to learn more about the business and actually, you know, work alongside the team. One of those times has been out of necessity because there were a lot of changes in the first 2-3 months that were being made. And so, one time was out of necessity. So the last 2 months, not necessary at all. I've been completely focused on expansion, cleaning up operations, hiring, reorganizing the team, and, you know, kind of bringing some new managers in play, and kind of restructuring the management team.
No, that's awesome, man. You'll be able to avoid the pitfalls, right? Like I said, the E-Myth Revisited, if anyone hasn't read that book, it just really focuses on most people end up working in the business than on the business, right? And that's what scares people from a bakery or a retail or anything like that. So that's awesome. You can see that just in your strategy, right? You're not that far into it yet. You're already working on the next one in multiple ways. So that's good.
So when you came into it, I take it you had, that was part of your vision, right? You're sitting here to say, hey, look, I'm going to buy this and I'm going to scale it. I'm going to expand. So to kind of touch about on that, like in my mind, it's almost like, are you going to go out and buy other ice cream shops, or are you going to sit there and go, I'm going to grow organically? I mean, what are those strategies? What did it look like on your plan?
Yeah. So plan is definitely to expand. The initial, you know, if you're looking at any retail food and beverage space, the easiest playbook is just more locations, right? So that was, you know, without knowing about the space, my plan was cool. Open more locations, get to 120 years. Doesn't matter how long it takes, but you know, that's what we're going to get to. So the ultimate vision was just opening shops nationwide. And then obviously starting in Arizona, get to a sustainable place here, and then, you know, continue to scale on the West Coast and beyond. But the opportunity is always there to acquire existing shops that are maybe mom and pop shops around the country that aren't doing very, very well. And so we can rebrand those shops, which I'm definitely open to. If that opportunity has come up once or twice, numbers just didn't make sense for us.
Sure.
The beauty of what we do and how we operate is everything is out of window service. So we're only our shops are only 500 to 700 square feet. So it's one, it's very tough to find in traditional retail. And any of the existing shops are typically 1200 to 1500 plus square feet. So for us to build out that space and actually utilize it, a little bit more expensive than we really need to get. So the playbook's a little slower for us because we're trying to find spaces that are really unique, maybe even one-off, you know, single buildings that aren't in traditional retail spaces, strip malls, normal malls. And so, yeah, we have to be pretty picky with what we're looking for. But the plan is definitely to acquire existing shops if those come up.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So then I guess, you know, let's shift gears. So let's talk about the brand, right? You're in a competitive space. You're in retail. What is that differentiation factor that's going to, and how much time do you spend thinking about your brand and kind of that messaging, right? Because I think the companies that grow are the ones that nail that,
yeah,
right? And then from then on, everything is built around that.
Yeah. So I spend a lot of time thinking about how we're going to hold this level or this standard and this brand as we go into other states. I think it's fairly easy to hold or sustain what we're doing in Arizona just because we've been here for 6 years. We're very well known. So any location I open up, fairly straightforward, right? People know we have a presence here. So, but jumping into new markets is always tough. So I spent a lot of time thinking about how we're going to enter new markets, how we're going to approach other brands, how we can work with other brands in the coffee space or restaurant space to kind of work in tandem with them to build a culture or a brand in those other states. So the differentiator for us is two things. One, our locations are very different. So from a visual perspective, we just look very different. We're not in traditional retail. We're not yet a nostalgic, like legacy sort of brand. So we're not stale, if you will. There's a lot of fun and like uniqueness that we're bringing into flavors and social media and just our approach in approaching our customers and how we work with them. So there's a variety of ways that we stand out, but the biggest piece is what are our locations.
Nice. Okay. Now I heard that on the other podcast I was listening to, you know, is there like a donut type product that you have? Is there something that's like kind of like your leading piece, yeah, that makes y'all very unique?
Yeah. So our
I love donuts.
I love ice cream. And so, I've been on keto, and the biggest barrier is not eating donuts and not eating ice cream. So
no kidding.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah, brutal. So our core product is an ice cream stuffed donut. So that is our biggest differentiator. Obviously, we have your traditional cones, cups, floats, and everything in between, but what we're known for specifically in Phoenix, our original shop is our ice cream stuffed donut. So that's what we promote. That's what we're known for. And
sounds like heaven.
Yeah, it's incredible. I've gained a few pounds since August. I'll tell you that for sure.
So one of the first businesses I got into out of college, I started a bar. You know, I got a couple guys together. We opened a bar. We lived in Austin. It was on 6th Street. We thought, hey, man, we're going to make a killing. But the problem was, is that, you know, if you drink, consume alcohol and you're in that business, you find that every single night in that business is a party. right? It's like, man, so it's hard sometimes to monetize that.
You're working in the business, not on the business, Casey.
In the business, right? So I would imagine you've got to be careful, like not to grab a donut ice cream every day.
Every day.
Keep that
to once a week. It was like that for a few months, I will tell you. Like anytime I was in our distribution center, I was working alongside all of it. So it was a daily thing for sure. I'm actually curious, how did that bar go and what happened with that?
Oh man, it was a disaster.
Guys running a bar. Like that's the business sound to you.
I will tell you, it was so much fun. But, you know, when we go back to those personal guarantees, you know, even though I'm not personally guarantee the loan, because we did a lot of cash and did those kind of things, you know, you got to sign for the ice machine. You got to sign for the credit card thing. I mean, everything you had to sign for. Yeah. And so it was one of the best learning experiences. I chose not to go, after I graduated college, I chose not to go to get my MBA or do any of those things. I took that cash and I went and opened a business. And I'll tell you, it was the best MBA I've ever had, man. I learned everything not to do in a business, which sometimes is the best, right?
School of hard knocks is the best school of all.
Oh, it's a tough one.
Did you guys shut that business down or did y'all end up just giving it away?
I tried to get it sold. I had a couple guys that, you know, that were interested in our model and what we were doing, but we had no business plan. We had no like expansion. I mean, it was just truly like, I did not like my day-to-day job. I was like, I graduated, I got a job. And I was like, there is no way that I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I'm not. And I was like, we got to do something.
I can relate to that. That was, you know, if we're summing it up in one sentence, then it's probably why I got into it. And most people listening are also wanting to get into this space.
So I guess kind of, you know, going through, so you're in the kind of expansion mode right now, right? How are you going to fund those expansions, right? How did you decide on it? Is it, like I said, I think you guys are going to keep it all corporate, right? Mm-hmm. You didn't go down the franchise model. What was the thinking behind that? And then ultimately, how are you going to, is it going to be more SBA loans until you kind of hit the max, or do you have some other strategy?
Yeah. So it'd be a mixture of a few things. I mean, to jump on the franchise piece really quick, simply said, I just wanted to control every aspect of it for the long run. Something might change in 10, 20, 30 years from now, but for now, I really want to have my hands on every piece of the puzzle. Obviously, build a great team around me to support me. But I just really want to have full control over the brand, messaging, approach, customer service. I just really want to double down on perfecting the model. And so nothing against franchising. I don't think it fits our brand as well as it could. So yeah, keeping it corporate, again, things might change in 20 years from now. And then to fund expansion, there's really two ways we can approach it. For something like a truck, for example, that we're looking at in Arizona, we're probably going to finance a piece of that. But for our locations, if they're existing builds and we don't have to do a ton inside, let's say they were previous coffee shops, ice cream shops, any food and beverage spot, our builds are anywhere from 25 to 35K. So very, very.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's
good. Yeah. So we can use most of our, we can just use cash for those. But something, you know, a larger scale, if we are building something from scratch or we're building a trailer like we're working on now or our truck, those are more in the $80,000 to $100,000 range. Again, full build outs, we will put some cash down and utilize some financing as well. If SBA is available to me at better interest rates, I'll definitely utilize that. But more than likely, we'll go private funding or eventually raise some capital if we need to continue. Yeah.
At the current SBA rates, it's probably better to go find, you know, try to find some interest rate capital. It's a little bit different. And it's probably trading right around private capital anyways, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And as you get to that point, let's definitely have a conversation if you're looking for ways to expand. You know, we'd be happy to kind of explore that. And it's funny you say, so kind of the truck route, everybody associates trucks with kind of low cost, but from your side, it's the opposite, right? That food truck, there's a lot, three locations for that one, right?
Yeah, people would be surprised at the kind of, if obviously you could find trucks, used trucks, you know, that are pretty beat up for 10, 20,000, you can maybe put 20 to 30,000 into it. So you're about 50 grand out of pocket. But if you want a good, you know, at least a reliable truck and you want the thing to look halfway decent, you're going to put at least 80 grand into it.
Yeah. I mean, quality, right? I mean, you guys are, you guys have tremendous good reviews, and you have to continue to maintain that image regardless of whether it's a truck or if it's a physical store.
But you know, for the people that are listening and you think about trucks and you start thinking about the expansion, not only that, now you've got your general liability, those costs go up, right? The workers' comp for the driver that you're actually driving. It's, there's a lot to put into that consideration, right? So it also brings on a whole nother level to the business that maybe you're not, you haven't been thinking about in the past.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot more risk, a lot more capital involved, events, catering. I mean, there's a whole other ballgame there that we're exploring. We've done a handful of those things already, just identifying the risk versus reward there. But I think it's really worth the awareness that comes with those kind of mobile setups. So, yeah.
Awesome. The one question I had before we move on to kind of our rocket round, right, which is, you said we a few times. Who is we? Is it just you? Do you have a couple of key members of the team that's kind of helping you make the day-to-day and implementing that vision? Or what's that look like on the corporate side?
Yeah, on the corporate side, it's simply me. Obviously, I have two managers, but from a like high-level leadership perspective, it's really just me on a day-to-day working all these projects. And luckily, I have that in-shop support. But everything else as far as expansion, build-outs, branding, anything like that, that's all on me.
What I like is he says we, because there, what do they say? There's no I in team. Uh-huh. And that's a beautiful part of what you're doing, man. It's about your team.
Yeah. This would not exist obviously with.
No, and that's going to grow, right? You're approaching that critical point where you start to have to think about all of the auxiliary things that are not core to a business, right? And it's funny. So our model is really providing that as a backbone to businesses that we have. And it's really that sales, marketing, HR, IT, accounting, and legal. Those are all things that are kind of on the outside of a business, outside of the core of what it is you provide and how you provide it. And you know, I love what you're doing. I mean, you definitely have a vision there. And I think you're going to start to hit some of those, start to have to spend more time and think of those and have people that are going to take on some of those responsibilities and kind of grow that back office.
Because right now, everything you just mentioned, like that's on show, right? Legal, payroll, hiring, firing, manage. I mean, from outside of the shops, it's shown. So I will look for support at some point. Once we get to four locations, I think I will reach a capacity that, that will be a lot. It will be more tough for me to continue to focus on scaling. So we'll probably bring one or two more people on board from a leadership standpoint at that point.
So I've got one little quick question here. So have you found that moment yet where you're like, when you look in the mirror, you're like, hey, my business is successful? Or do you feel like you've got a ways to go to where you look at yourself and say, man, we're success?
Yeah, that is, that I don't know if that will ever happen, to be honest with you. That's more of a personal problem, but
I feel the pain. Trust me. It's how we are as entrepreneurs, right? We can always improve, always get better. It can be best, but sometimes we got to look in the mirror and go, hey, I've accomplished a lot, and pat yourself on the back.
That's valuable. And I think I need to spend more time doing that. My kind of default is what's next. You know, let's keep going. Let's push forward. Like, let's get another business.
It's us here too.
No. I literally, my biggest weakness, I tell my leadership is ultimately, always focused on that next problem to solve. And you kind of stop and you forget to stop and say, hey, good job, Casey. You solved those other 3,000 problems,
But I'm a little older than you guys. And I'm going to tell you right now, you need to stop and you need to pat yourself on the back, because I'm going to tell you what, this is one hell of a journey, right? Yeah. I will tell you right now, you're a success, right? You were at a workstation, you were at a desk and you said, hey, I'm going to go buy a company. And now you're opening your visions to open four. That's huge. That's a win, right? We got a short life. These are the things we got to celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done, Sean. So definitely, thank you for sharing that journey. Yeah, definitely nice. Appreciate it. So let's move on to our rocket round. So, I think first question, right? Speaking of what we were just talking about, what do you like to do in your free time?
Yeah. So there's, everybody listening will probably relate to this too. Outside of working, searching for more businesses, like I have a couple of potential partners that we're working on a few deals here just outside of the food and beverage space. And I'm actually working on a second food and beverage concept right next to one of our novel locations. So 90% of my life is just kind of business. And I really actually enjoy that. So finding, building new concepts, buying more businesses, just researching businesses, whatever it is. And then I'm really into running in the gym, simply put. I running my first marathon in a month. Just random like fitness related stuff is the other 10% of my life. But that's it.
Work off those donut ice creams.
But I'll tell you, the other thing about running is that all that time you're working your business plan. I know you are. You know, you're listening to music, you're thinking through every process. It's one of the best things, man. I run too.
Sean said the answer we all do, which is we're kind of adrenaline junkies with the businesses and just kind of thinking what's next. And doing that while you're exercising usually is not a bad idea. That's why I like flying, because flying it forces me to think about the airplane and I ignore everything else in life. And so,
luckily, nothing's moving under me, so I can go straight for 2 hours and not have to think about much. But yeah, that's definitely a time to reflect and sit back and like kind of remove myself from the day to day. And a lot of what I'm working on comes from the time I spend outside of the business, right? Whether it's in the gym, it's 12 o'clock at night, not able to sleep, just laying there staring at the wall. All the ideas flood in the moments where you are actually like taking a step back intentionally. So that helps.
What's pretty crazy is I've had two things pop up that I was running on 2 years ago, and I had this repetitive like process where I just kept beating it up. And both of them have come true. But I thought through everything while I was running, and then I thought through my execution. It took 2 years, but then bam.
Casey's not the fastest thinker, but
it's not. No, I'm pondering.
Awesome. All right. So let's move on to the second question. So what's been your most most memorable business moment?
I really think just buying the business or closing on the business was the most memorable moment, because that has completely changed my life in incredible ways. I mean, just the trust I have from other people, even though I have no idea what I'm doing, like, let's be honest, right? I'm figuring it out every day, but
we all stumble forward.
Right. Just closing on one transaction has opened my world up to so many opportunities from other partners, founders, investors. Like the concept I'm working on now with another partner would have never come up if I didn't have the credibility of at least one transaction, right? So, that has completely changed my life in many ways over. So that I think was the most memorable moment, even though in the moment, I was like, crap, I've got to go to work tomorrow and learn how to run a retail business. So in the moment, it was not excitement. It was like, oh, we did this. Like, let's double down and figure this out.
You know, what's crazy is, so we recently went to the ETA conference at Harvard. I've been there twice. Yes. We like going to the conferences. We did the Rice conference here, and we stumble across entrepreneurs that have been searching for like 18 months, 24 months, because they're just trying to fit into this like perfect box of a deal. And then
you looked for two months,
closed your business, and now you're expanding. By the time, many of these guys are still searching, right? It's pretty powerful, man.
I'm curious to see where you're at in 18 months. I mean, let's get to 18 locations in 18 months. All right. That's the next podcast we'll do with you.
Don't overthink.
that would be the ideal, but as fast as we can go. But to touch on that really quick, obviously my criteria was a lot less strict, I think, than most people. But to be honest, you're never going to find the perfect business. So sitting there for 18, 24 months trying to find the perfect business is... It probably will never happen. You have to be okay with a high level of uncertainty. And I think what people get stuck on is the lack of knowledge in a certain industry too. So they may come across a really good business, great financials, great opportunity, but they don't understand the business. So they don't know how to, they don't come from that background. The people I've connected with in the past 6 to 7 months that have gotten into this space with little to no knowledge of their industry have closed quickly because, they didn't overthink the process. They knew that they could learn as they go. And the beauty of acquiring versus starting is that you don't have to know all the answers because the business is already working. So even if you don't, if you go in there and don't change anything, things will stay the same or should stay the same. So you have
huge advice
over a year, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's about finding something that's good enough, right? And, being able to work through adversity. I mean, our last business we closed, that thing took a year, right? And we thought we were going to be closed 6 months prior. And you work through the challenges and the issues and the long nights and everything that kind of happens, and you get it done. And
now you work through the next set of challenges. So that's what being an entrepreneur is all about, knowing enough to be dangerous and moving forward.
I'll tell you one of the fun things about Ferris, and it's kind of what you're going on. I call it the ready, fire, aim strategy, right? You know, it's like, let's just go, let's just do it. We'll stumble, we'll find our way. But if we don't start now, we'll be
a year down later and realize, it's been a year since we have done anything. So
I actually had the expectation of, you know, 12 to 18 months of search. I mean, that's what I was seeing, right? I didn't think that it was possible to close on anything sooner than that. So to close on something in 6 months from beginning searches is sort of a blessing in a way, to be honest.
That's awesome.
Awesome. And so then last question, what's been your favorite business tool or resource to kind of help you in the journey?
This is going to sound crazy. Twitter kind of takes the cake for me, I think. I've learned 90% of what I need to from an SBA route, how to operate a business in general. I've met the most incredible people, the most incredible supporters, advisors, mentors, like pretty much everything great that has happened in the past, you know, 6 months has come from that platform. And it always sounds a little crazy.
You are the only person that has answered that question that way. So now you got to educate me. All right. Who should I be following on Twitter to kind of help?
No kidding.
You know, get in the know with what you're seeing out there.
So I would have to pull it up and go through who I'm following. There's hundreds. I mean, there's.
All right. Well, maybe if you could email it to the team after, and we'll put it on the show notes for people, and I will go follow those people. Cause I you know, you hear that, right? It's Twitter. I think it's like a gold mine. You just have to spend the time and really mine it. And people, I think, you know, get some real value there.
It's X now. So you got to change the terminology, right?
You're right. So what I'm going to do is send you a list of, let's say, 10 of the top.
Yeah, your 10 favorite. That'd be awesome.
That's huge.
With those. But yeah, again, it sounds crazy, but truthfully, if you spend the time connecting with others that are in your space or others you admire in other industries, just setting up 20, 30 minutes with them has taught me pretty much everything I need to know about business. And, you know, they're always there as resources and mentors as I go along. So yeah, I've met some of the most incredible people, and the tools and resources that I'm currently using in my business have pretty much all come from that platform.
Perfect. Well, Sean, been tremendous amount of information, you know, really appreciate you just being candid and honest with us, right? And sharing what you know. I think listeners is probably, you know, 35 nuggets shared throughout that. And so we'll definitely capture those, but really appreciate you taking the time to kind of talk to us today, Sean.
But I'll tell you, man, one of those things that you said, man, right there, this is my takeaway from you. Like, do it, like go, like don't overanalyze it, make it happen, solve problems along the way, and don't give up. Right. It's that intensity of it. And I see it. You're like a focused guy. This is what you do. And you're going to get to the top of the mountain no matter what. I totally get that from you. So it's pretty powerful.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing where you land on the journey. And, you know, we'll definitely have you back on here in the future to hear more.
Yeah, I would love to. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it.
Sean, nice meeting you.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the M&A Launchpad podcast. If you've enjoyed today's podcast and would like to support us, please leave us a rating and a review after you listen. If you're looking for guidance on your next business acquisition or sale, capital to support your next business transaction, or to invest in a private equity opportunity, visit equitylaunchpad.com to learn more and to connect with our team. If you know of an individual who would be a great guest for the show, head over to equitylaunchpad.com/nominate, where you'll have the chance to refer yourself or someone else to be a guest on our show. I'm Casey Minshew, and I look forward to talking with you next week.